Okay. Thank you. My name is Terry. I am a grateful compulsive eater, doing my best to live these principles of the program today and grateful for all the gifts that the program has given me. I'm supposed to share my experience, strength, and hope, and I've thought about what to share. So I'm just going to kind of give you a little bit of life before how I got here and how it's going now. I got into OA in June of 1984, the Christmas before in 1983. I managed to gain 8 pounds in 3 days because I ate 5 pounds of a sugar substance, all, mostly by myself, on the top of all the other goodies that were there, and couldn't zip or button my pants that I had worn 3 days before to my sisters. And got home, my husband had taken a picture of me. My birthday is the 31st, and he had taken a picture of me in some new clothes that I had to buy because all my others were too small. And that was slide film. For those of you who are young folks, there was no such thing as digital back then or computers. And of course, had to finish taking the film and send it off, and it took several months. Got it back and got a slide projector, and I was projecting the pictures life size on the wall, and started ranting and raving about the stupid Photoshop getting our photos mixed in with somebody else's, and just carrying on. And there was a picture of a person, the only person in the picture, on the wall, life size. And my husband looked at me with a very baffled expression, and he said, "Do you not know who that person is?" And I very honestly said, "I've never seen that person before in my life." And he said, "Honey, it's you." And it's like somebody had taken a frying pan and just smacked me in the face with it, and all the denial, all the things that my disease had done to tell me that, things weren't that bad, I wasn't that fat, nothing was a real problem, came crashing down. And so I saw an ad on TV for, I don't know, it was probably a month or two later. Only time I ever saw it on TV, that in my area, for OA, and I wrote off for information. And I got into my first meeting in June of 1984. And I remember going out the door that night and telling my husband, "I'm going to try something. It's not going to work," because I had tried diets and pills and gyms and starvation and everything else that all of us probably here have tried. I said, "I'm going to go try something tonight. It's not going to work, so I'm not going to tell you what it is." That's how much hope I had. And I went to my first meeting, and I walked in the door, and I heard my story told by the 12 or so women that were in the meeting. And I found out I had a disease, that it had a name, and that I was powerless over food. And I went home with a fistful of pamphlets. And my husband couldn't shut me up because I was so excited. I finally had hope for the first time. I worked a pretty solid program. I gave all kinds of service. I had a sponsor. I did my best to work the steps as best I knew how to. I did service within my group, my inner group. I did service at Region 3 level. I got down to a goal weight. And I was very grateful for program. I have had a wonderful sponsor. My sponsor I have today, I got in about 1988 or 89. We can't figure out how when it was because it's been so long ago. But was just really grateful for the program. And then I moved to Europe for 2 years. And where I lived, didn't have an English speaking meeting, didn't have any meetings of OA that I knew of close by to where I lived. And we didn't have Zoom, we didn't have all these wonderful things we've got today. And I just was not willing to go to any lengths, and tried to just coast on 14 and a half years of program. And we all know how well that works. And so it only took the first compulsive bite, and I was off. And when we moved back to the stateside, I tried going back to a couple of meetings, and my disease just gave me all kinds of excuses why that just wasn't going to be okay for me. And so I spent 10 years in relapse. About the 7.5 year mark, I got an email from a person in Texas where I had lived before, a very short paragraph. And one things that she said is, I wanted to let you know that I think of you often and frequently use the tidbits of wisdom I learned from you. Just yesterday, I had to remind myself it was none of my business what other people thought about me. This brought me sanity in what could have been a crazy situation. I have no idea what words of wisdom I had said to her. And this was 15, 10, yeah, this was 10 years later from that. But I could feel my higher power, which I choose to call the great mystery, tapping me on the shoulder and saying, isn't it time to go back? And it took me another 2.5 years of struggling with my disease before I crawled back into a meeting. I lived in Alaska at that time. I was pissed. I was madder than hell because I was, number one, I was still a compulsive overeater. I hadn't been magically zapped to a normal eater. So I was mad about that. I was mad that I had let my program go. I was mad because I knew how much work I was going to have to do with the steps and other, you know, other parts of the program to get back to recovery. I was mad because I had gained all my weight back plus another 20 pounds. So I was up to 175 pounds when I came back into program, and I'm less than 5 feet tall, so it shows a lot. And I was just all around mad. I wasn't mad at my higher power, but I was just mad. And fortunately, the couple of people who were in the meeting that I went back into loved me the way I was and put up with my sulking and my pouting, and I managed to start getting back into working my program. I called my sponsor that I had had before, and gratefully she took me back. We can't remember exactly how many years it is, but close to 35 years together. And she knows me better than I know myself. She's 86 years old right now, and I hope I have her for a while longer. So it was really hard to return. And I knew that when I came back into program, I had to get into a deeper level of working the steps and the traditions. And I had heard about the principles off and on. And so, not too long after I got back into program, I found that I needed to do something besides work the steps as they're written, as we read them in the meetings. And please, nobody misunderstand. They're absolutely wonderful the way they are written. But what I had to do is I had to dig deeper than, because I had many times over my years in program before relapse, I had done the steps as they're written, and I had used the new workbook, and I had done all that, but I needed something more. So I started taking each of the principles. So step one, honesty, you know, step two, hope, so forth. And also the principles of the traditions. And I started writing down the definitions out of the dictionary. Some of those definitions gave me a little different angle on how to look at that principle. For instance, for step four, it's courage. And if you take the word apart and look at the etymology, C-O-U-R is from Latin and then French, and it stands for heart. And so what I came to understand is if I'm going to do a really thorough four step, I have to do it out of love. I have to come through my heart to do my fourth step. Because if I do a really good, thorough fourth step, it's the most loving thing I can do for myself. It's not about picking out my faults and beating myself over the head with a stick because you're doing this, you're doing that, you said this, you said that. It's about looking honestly at where what I do and say is hurtful to myself and other people. And I want to change that. And so that comes from a place of love. So I did, it probably took me over 2 years to go through all the principles. And I even went into the concepts, all the concepts. For those of you who are in higher service, you probably are aware of the 12 concepts, and they have principles as well. And I did this writing, and I asked myself some specific questions. Where do I apply this principle well or better than I did before I came into OA? With my own self, with my OA program, with my sponsor or sponsorees, with my meetings, with my service, with my family and my friends, with total strangers, like the lady, the teller at the bank, or something like that. With my coworkers, other groups I might be in, or my community, and then with my higher power. How well am I doing that? And then I have to look at where am I still falling short with this principle, with applying this principle in those same areas. And so it was a way of doing kind of a bit of a fourth step on each principle, and seeing where I could apply that better in my life. And that was huge. One of the things that happened to me when, about a year after I came back into program, was that I was in the grocery store where I lived in Alaska, and I had this pattern that would happen to me during my relapse. When I would go into the grocery store, I would start hearing the theme song from Jaws in the back of my head. And I would start trolling the aisles looking for that item that was going to scratch that itch, that urge, that craving that I had. And I remember I had been in program, back in program. I came back in 2008, and this was September of 2009. And I walked into the store and I heard the Jaws theme go off. And I thought, I don't want to do this. I had been struggling for a whole year. Sugar was my main, sugar and white flour, my main ones that were problems for me. And I just remember, oh God, no. And this voice very gently whispered in my ear, it doesn't matter what choices you make, I'm going to love you anyway. And my shitty committee that was all geared up to beat the crap out of me, because I would buy something, eat it in the parking lot, and then by the time I got home would be, self-flagellating. My shitty committee kind of went, huh? Because that was not something it had ever heard. And what I discovered at that point, I got home with my groceries. I had not bought anything that was a binge food. I had not eaten anything that was a binge food. And I have not had processed sugar since that day. It was completely taken away from me. I'd like to say that I've never had a compulsive bite of any kind since then. That's not true. But sugar's gone. I don't see it. I have a coffee group that I go to on Thursday mornings here in Texas, and it's at a donut shop, and the people have coffee in whatever sweets they want. I don't drink coffee because I don't do caffeine and I don't eat those sweets, and I don't see it. People are all around me eating it and passing it back and forth. I don't see it. I don't smell it. I don't want it. It doesn't register on my radar. It just simply isn't there. And I'm very, very grateful for that. But what I learned from that instant was that the crux of my disease is I lack self-love. And my disease feeds and feasts on that. And so, what I had to learn to do through the process of trying to work my program and work my steps, I had to learn to love myself. I had to learn to make loving choices for myself, and to look at myself. One of the things I tried to do was to look at myself through the eyes of the great mystery. How does the great mystery see me? And what does it think of me when it sees me? And that's something. And I'd like to say, well, that was an instantaneous change and life got all rosy after that. No, it was a process, just like everything else in this program. It was a process and I had to work. And today, I just am grateful that I've been 16 years off the sugar. I've been 11 years off of alcohol. Alcohol for me was the equivalent of liquid sugar. And so it wasn't about being an alcoholic. It was about a food item for me. And I've been off alcohol for 11 years. I've gone from a size 14, 16 to a size 4. I've been able to wear the same size clothes at that level for the last 3 years or so. And I'm just so grateful. I have about 3.5 years ago, before we moved from Alaska back to Texas, I just had huge amounts of fear coming up. And so I had to learn to call out fear, give it a name, look it in the eyes, and say, I know what you are. And one of the things I started doing was nightly writing a letter to the great mystery. And I wrote down things I was grateful for, things that were troubling me or giving me trouble, things that I was excited about, whatever it was. I wrote a letter to the great mystery. And then I wait, and I do this every night. I've done it every night since then, with a few exceptions. And I sit quietly after I write to the great mystery, and I sit there, and then I write down what I hear in response. It is always loving. It is always supported. It is always encouraging. Every once in a while, there's a suggestion. There was a suggestion recently about, maybe you should write about this. And so the great mystery is always there for me in the most loving way. And I'm so grateful that through this program, I have been able to develop a much closer and very, very, very personal relationship with the great mystery. I don't adhere to any particular religion. But what I have does work for me, and that's the key thing. So I'm trying to see what else I might share. I go to 5 meetings a week, usually. I do what service I can where I live. There are no face-to-face meetings, and my sponsor lives in Abilene, which is 110 miles away. I recently they just started a face-to-face meeting there after all this COVID stuff, and I drove 225 miles round trip to go to a meeting to help support that new meeting. And I give whatever service I can. I lead at meetings. Whatever it is I can do, I try to do. I try to make outreach calls and encourage people I sponsor. I call my sponsor. We call on a weekly basis, and we don't talk about food most of the time. We just talk about program and where I am with program. And she's got what I want. She has a wonderful spiritual life. She's just one of these very calm people, and she's only had to pull out her army boots a few times on me in the many years we've been together. But she's always very supportive and been a wonderful asset in my program. Right now, I'm writing an end of year review. What I've started doing a number of years ago is about this time of year, since my birthday is the 31st, I write down areas where I think I've made improvements over the year in my program, areas where I still need some improvement, and areas that I would like to see myself visualize myself doing better in the coming year. And that's really helpful because it helps keep me balanced. It shows me I am making progress, which is really important. Because it's sometimes after you've been in program a long time, a lot of times you have a lot of baby steps that happen rather than great big chunks of things happening like I did in the beginning. And so it's important for me to look back over a whole year, and all of a sudden I can say, oh, wow, I'm coping better with fear right now. I'm not falling victim to that fear like I was. I still need to work on fear. It's still something that troubles me, but man, I've made some progress, and that helps a whole lot. And the other thing I'm showing is that I'm showing a lot more positive progress than negative need to improve progress kind of things than I've had in the past. When I first started that, it was all I got to keep working. There's a whole bunch of this to work on, and I only had a couple of things on the list where I'd made positive progress. And today, that's much more balanced. So to me, that's an indication of good recovery. So that's kind of where I'm at. I was going to leave off. I know we're coming to an end of my share here. I have a favorite section in the big book on page 451. And it kind of starts over on page 450. It talks about the person realized I had to separate my sobriety from everything else that was going on in my life. No matter what happened or didn't happen, I couldn't drink. In fact, none of these things I was going through had anything to do with my sobriety. The tides of life flow endlessly, for better or worse, both good and bad. And I cannot allow my sobriety to become dependent on these ups and downs of living. Sobriety must live a life of its own. More important, I came to believe that I cannot do this alone. From childhood, despite the love I experienced, I never let people, even those closest to me, inside my life. All my life, I had lived the deepest of lies, not sharing with anyone my true thoughts and feelings. I thought I had a direct line to God, and I built a wall of distrust around myself. In AA, I faced the pervasive we of the 12 steps and gradually realized that I can separate and protect my sobriety from outside hazards only in as much as I rely on the sober experience of other AA members and share their journey through the steps to recovery. The rewards of sobriety are bountiful and as progressive as the disease they counteract. That's one sentence gives me the most powerful of hopes. Certainly, among these rewards for me are release from the prison of uniqueness and the realization that participation in the AA way of life is a blessing and a privilege beyond estimate. A blessing to live a life free from the pain and degradation of drinking and filled with the joy of useful, sober living, and a privilege to grow in sobriety one day at a time and bring the message of hope as it was brought to me. And I'll pass. I'd love to hear everybody's shares.